What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful with those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're anyone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as mints. It's got a little bit of caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. I'm driving around showing houses, making phone calls. I'll chew a piece before jiu-jitsu class or, you know, before a CrossFit workout. Really just anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost and need to focus, I'll pop a piece and it gets me to where I need to be. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
And shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. They've got amazing beard oils, balms, butters, everything you can think of for beard care, but they also have shampoo and conditioner, body wash, and they make these amazing smelling candles. And the great thing about all their stuff is it's made with natural ingredients. They don't use a lot of them, and it's just all natural locally here in St. Louis. So if you go in, check out their website, and use the promo code Zach and Pat, you'll get 10% off your purchase. All their stuff, like I said, all smells amazing. They've got tobacco, vanilla, mahogany, teak wood, coastal drift. They got a few different smells, and they're all amazing. So check out Captain Beard Co.
Promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off. All right, guys. Now to introduce our awesome guest today. He is a father. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt, the managing partner of Blue Spark, the great and powerful Kevin Smith.
Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. What's up, dude? Great to be here. Coming on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on.
Dude, I don't know. I'm really stoked. Just right at the beginning, this beard oil. I'm looking across the table.
Yeah. Smells good, right?
Some fantastic beard too.
Yeah, well, we try.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, we'll try to just trim mine this morning. So yeah. I wondered, I was a little
scruffy. Shaved mine up the other day. I got to clean it up a little bit.
But, yeah. You always got to get it off the neck, you know, because otherwise you look a little.
Yeah.
Got to keep it clean.
Got to keep it clean. So, Kevin, why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself? Like who, you know, tell us, you know, kind of the origin story.
Yeah, sure. Yes. So I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, born and raised. Grew up really into wrestling, grappling, football. My dad played college football. He was a lot bigger than me. Got stuck with this.
Yeah.
My mom always wanted to keep me like really, really entertained. So I grew up in bands and things like that. So not only was I a band nerd, I was also a sport nerd.
What instruments do you play?
Dude, guitar, sax, drums. Yeah. Okay. A little bit of bass.
Nice.
Everything.
A little bit of everything.
Okay.
Clarinet. Well,
what was your favorite? I always thought the saxophone sounded really like just sexy. Dude, like that's just like a sexy sounding instrument.
I was best at sax. Guitar's the most fun.
For sure. Yeah. I grew up playing guitar too. I haven't picked one up in 10 years, but probably more than that, honestly. But it's always something I say I'm going to get back into, but I just never have.
You've got responsibility now, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, because it's like I've only got so many hours in the day. You know, that's the hard part. And so you said you played in, like, was this like school bands or did you play in like rock bands or like?
Yeah,
what?
Man. So yeah, I played in two school bands, but also had like a band that played venues outside.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So like my very first show that I've ever played was at the High Point. You guys remember this
place?
Yeah. On Skanker? So
yeah.
You have to load all your shit and up is like 25 steps.
Oh. Wow. Gosh.
So like here you are with a half cab and drum sets and all sorts of stuff, like skinny little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. And then you get on the floor and the floor just like
really
dips. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's obviously no longer around.
But, yeah. You know. Well, it's right next to where like the High Point Drive, like the High Point mm-hmm. Burger Place and all that stuff is, right?
Yeah. Or if you're a menace, you know, what's that bar? Par Bar?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yep. But anyway, so you grew up, you know, playing music. And
yep. Stuff. Music into grappling. Went away from school. Started as a finance major in college. Switched to English. Numbers end up freaking me out, which is funny because that's all I do all day, every day now. Started my very first company when I was in college, moved back here, tried doing the same thing, lost my money, went to work for a different guy, and then I started Big Blue Spark in 2018.
And what was the first job, the first company you started?
The first company I started was Make a Scene Production, so I just booked bands.
Okay.
At risk, you know, did promotion. Yeah.
Okay.
Sweet. You just book venues for them or?
Yeah. So I'd book the venues, book the band, you know, do the negotiation, do the marketing, ticketing, stuff like that.
And for multiple venues or just one venue?
Multiple venues.
Gotcha. Oh, so you're almost like a manager to these bands.
So
kind of.
Not really, because I was always trying to get them cheaper than they wanted to come here for.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So I was the guy taking the risk to bring them to St. Louis.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yep. Cool. And where, what, any big name bands that you were able to get here to St. Louis or anything that took off?
So I think my favorite one was I booked the Civil War. So you guys remember them?
Mm-hmm.
It was a male and female like folk duo. Booked them in Cicero's. There were 20 people there. And I was like, these guys are going to be awesome. The next year they came back, they dropped an album, and they sold out the pageant.
Oh, damn. Shit.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yep.
Very That's cool. awesome.
It's like, sweet. I was like, dang, why didn't I get that date?
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
I brought you here.
Yes, I brought you. Come on, guys.
Cicero's is what's launched your career.
Yeah, a little loyalty here, guys. It'd be great.
Throw me a bone here. So you did that. What year is this when you were doing this?
Jesus, that would have been like 2010 to 2013 or 14, okay. Something like that. Yeah.
And then, so after that, you did what?
Went to work for a different agency in town. Not going to name names because I don't want to give them any promo.
For sure.
Understand.
Fair enough. And then I launched Big Blue Spark in 2018.
Okay.
So tell us along something. The similar lines, or what's Big Blue Spark?
Pretty much same thing. We do things a tiny bit differently without getting into too much of the nitty gritty because no one really cares, but. We produce galas, nonprofit events, concerts, fairs, festivals, and corporate.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
And we are we're not at risk right now. So pretty much people hire us to provide the service, but we are adding an event next year where we are actually the promoters of taking the gamble.
Gotcha. Yep. Can you say what that event is, or is that kind of quiet right now?
I'll put it this way. I'm not going to say the name or the venue yet, but it's going to, the theme is basically an adult day camp.
Okay.
Okay.
So think of all the shit we did when we were kids.
Yeah.
We're just going to do that for adults, 21 and up.
That's awesome. Fun.
Yeah.
Just throwing some alcohol.
Do you know where it's going to be?
I do. I do.
Can't announce it.
I'm not going to announce
it. That's fine. We're not going to push it.
Yeah, we won't push that.
But I'll make sure I send you guys tickets.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
let us know. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll promote it on here and yeah. Well, shoot, if you give us tickets, we'll raffle them off here or sell them off.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Slip and slides, water gun fights, color wars, you name it. Like, that's
awesome.
What we're doing for. Just, cool. Just a bunch of grown folks.
Yeah, just grown folks running around like kids.
Pretty much.
Perfect. Sounds like fun. So, and you do jiu-jitsu. What gym are you out of?
Revive BJJ.
Okay.
St. Peter's. So part of TAC team.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, let's go.
Yep. Zach, yep. Oop. I mean, you're at Watson too, yep. Right? Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah. So how'd you get into jiu-jitsu? When did that?
So I started jiu-jitsu in 2016. I needed something to do. I'm growing up wrestling. I was getting kind of lazy.
Where'd you wrestle at?
CBC.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Just getting kind of lazy and wanted something to do. So I started at ATT Evolution in Tyron's gym.
Yep, Tyron's gym.
Jason Smith was the head coach there.
Yep.
So I started training with him in 2016. He moved and started at Maelstrom. So I followed him there, and then I jumped to Revive in 2021.
Okay.
Yep. So
why'd you make the jump?
Dude, you don't. No, I mean, I don't mind saying it. I mean, it's anything I would say to Jason. I think it was, I wanted to get to a place where I don't think I was able to get when I was at Maelstrom, right? Like, it's like I wasn't getting younger. I wanted to compete a little bit more, but I also wanted to be around people that also had that competition mindset. And it's a big difference. You know, when you have.
You got several world champions at Revive.
You have several world champions there, right? And you have coaches that still compete. And I think Jason is an amazing black belt. I mean, if you ever roll with him, it's just super, super technical. But there's that difference between we're crushing it in the room, but then also learning and doing those things that win you matches, mm-hmm. right? So it's a different mindset. And that's really what pushed me to, I was like, I'm looking at Revive. This is like, if I want to be a dog, I got to go train with a bunch of dogs.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah. I've taken that mentality into jiu-jitsu, but also into, I mean, it's kind of what led me into the real estate company that I'm at right now, because I was at one where I just feel like I wasn't being pushed. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go join one where there's a room full of killers, and I'm going to go over there and be a killer.
Well, there's that mindset, right? Like, evolve or die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so many people get complacent.
Yeah, we talk about that. That's a pretty much general theme through what we talk about here is if you're not growing, you're dying. So
yeah. So you started training in 2016, moved over to Revive in 2021. So you compete pretty regularly, don't you?
Yeah, dude, I didn't. So I got my brown belt earlier this year. I didn't compete as much as I wanted to. I had that pro fight in June.
Yeah.
Next year, I'm trying to fill up my schedule a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, it's dude. The jump's been great.
Oh, so you, did he?
Yeah,
did,
he was on the first. Adam, the one before that. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
And you went? Who did you go against? This guy out of Arnold, right? Or the boggy guy, right? Because that remember that match? Because like, that guy was huge. Remember we were looking at that like. Yeah, dude. We were like, it was like, there's no way that these guys were the same.
Dude, so I
was like, that well, dude was like just giant.
Well, you know Sala, yes, right? So it's like, course. So I walk in and he's like, did you see your guy? I'm like, yeah. He's like, are you going to go walk over there and see what he weighs in it? I'm like, Adam, you're the one that booked him for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think it matters at this yeah. point.
At
like,
this
I'm
point,
here
I'm
now,
here.
Dude.
I'm going to fucking do it. You know, I'm not going to back out now.
I'm like, this guy's when fucking huge.
Yeah. Because you look like a big bitch if you're like, oh, this guy's too big.
This guy's too big.
He was the guy with the massive lower half. Like, he just.
No, his arms.
Of him was massive.
Yes. Yeah. He was just
I'm trying to remember. There's
saucy.
One guy that had just massive fucking legs.
Dude, so he walked out. My mom was on stage, right? And a couple of my buddies, and my mom's like, is Kevin scrapping against that guy? And everyone's like, yeah, I think so. She's like, shit.
Dude, he was just big.
Yeah, he's just big.
But I mean, you beat him, right?
Yeah, I beat him.
Yeah, you beat him. Yeah, so.
But that's the thing in jiu-jitsu.
It's not always
about what you look like and size.
Well, it's super funny because like after the match, he told Jasmine, he's like, gosh, he's like, that Kevin guy's hard to move. I was like, bro.
Yeah, you're a big old boy.
Right. I was like, did you see you?
Yeah, I was like, at that point, you almost don't want him to weigh in, because or at least I wouldn't want him to weigh in, just because I'm like, fuck, it's going to fuck with my head, dude, if I know this dude's 20 pounds heavier than
dude,
me.
Dude, actually
And I'm going to give myself that excuse.
Like, dude, oh. I thought about like drinking a sweat while I was out there, just to, like try to gain any advantage to see if there was, you know, I don't know what he's taking.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I was like, maybe it'll help.
Yeah, he's on something for sure. I mean, yeah, dude, that was a good match, though, if I remember right. Dude, so what did you think of competing on that? Was that the first time you've ever done one like that?
Dude, that was my first super fight, and I loved it. And dude, I mean, to be honest with you, I think I was less nervous for that than I was at tournaments.
Tournaments?
I was like, I can go out and give anyone hell for 5 or 6 minutes in one match, and, you know, just
right. It's so nice to just have one match. You know, that's what I've liked about it, because I've done that. I've been on that twice, and then I did the one for Strange Hands, and it's definitely a different environment, just because you got so many eyeballs on you versus like a tournament. It's like, okay, you got like your 10 guys, you know, whoever's at the tournament's watching, you know, or and it's way less pressure.
What do you think of the raised?
Not a fan of that.
I mean, I think it looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cool, and it's great for the spectators.
Yeah, well, like, as a fighter or bike deus, you know, what did it feel like? I mean,
bro, you gotta keep that shit tight.
Yeah, you gotta be very careful with your takedowns.
Calling off, right? Yeah. But I was like, man, if anyone's going off the stage, like, it's not gonna be me, right?
No. Yeah, it's like, gotta be him. You know,
I was like, I don't want to hear my mom talking shit after.
Right, but I also don't want to be I don't want to be double legging this guy into my mom. You know?
Oh, I double leg her into that. She'd probably smack him while he was over there. Yeah. So. my mom was the mom like in wrestling. She'd be like, take him down, Kevin. I'm like,
what do you think I'm doing, Mom?
Like, Mom, this guy also trains 6 days a week.
Yeah.
He's also trying to take me down.
He's also trying to take me down.
Yeah.
Nah, we want to stay on our feet here. Oh.
But, you know, I think what was funny, like, I actually felt so much better. Like, I loved having friends and family there versus, like, a lot of these IBJJF tournaments where you're out of town. It's just you. It's just coaches. Sometimes it's just you.
Yeah.
A little extra motivation.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. You're just like,
100%.
Yeah. Like, I'm not getting my ass beat in front of
them. Right. I mean, I remember that, like in baseball, like showing up, or like you pick someone out in the stand, like you don't know anybody, but like you pick somebody out in the stands, like playing for that person.
Yeah.
Like just like as motivation, like that person is here to see me play, and I'm going to
100%.
I'm going off to show off for them.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's like the thing is like, it's a knife's edge. Like you can either win, you can either lose. And it's like, wouldn't be the first time I've lost in my career. Won't be the last.
Right.
Damn. Like if I lose, like I'm going to.
Right.
The Leafs are going to make me like, we're going to lose.
Yeah. I lost my last one 2 weekends ago. And I mean, my arm is still sore.
A fucking weird move, though.
Yeah, dude. It was, I don't even know what he did. I mean, I do know what he did now because I've watched the video 100 fucking times. But
we're just sitting there like, what the fuck just happened? Like, what?
Dude, I saw that. Like, you just like.
Dude, he put me in like a weird Americana with his legs from bottom of side control. And apparently, he does it to everybody. So this past weekend, there was a, made me feel a little bit better. There was, they did like a, you heard a quintet.
Yeah.
You know, so they did something like that at, which quintet, for those people that aren't familiar, but it's a style of, it's like a promotion where basically the team has a total weight. So like, say it's like 600 pounds. So you get five guys and you got, or four or five guys and you got to assemble a team and you can't weigh more than 600 pounds or whatever the number is. And then it's like those teams go up against each other. And, you know, if you've got the first guys going, you pick your lineup and you have your first guys going. If there's no submissions and nobody submits anybody, ends in a draw, then both of those guys are out. But if one submits the other, the guy that won stays in and you just go down the line, which is pretty cool. Cool, like idea for a way to set it up. But they did something like that out of Arnold, an in-gym competition this past weekend with like a bunch of the 10th Planet guys and a bunch of the Arnold guys. And apparently the guy that I went against got like three people in that same fucking stupid submission. So I don't feel as bad because apparently it's just like the only thing he goes for. But it's just like, it definitely caught me off guard because if I'm in top of side control, I'm not expecting to be submitted.
That's the last thing you're
doing. Yeah, 100%. And and the fucking resets, you know, I swept him. We ended up, and I passed his guard and we ended up like right on the edge of the mat. So they reset us. And then right off the reset, he fucking threw it up and my arm was in there and I was yelping like a little girl because my arm fucking popped.
Dude, and sometimes at those resets, I'm like, shit, I'd much rather just start back up.
Yeah.
Because like,
dude, momentum, dude.
You lose that momentum.
I hate it.
Right? Like, you can be in heavy side control, cross-facing, yes, all sorts of stuff, and it's just like, well, it's kind of hard to replicate in that.
Right,
in that
you can't.
You just
you can't.
Really can't.
And then looking back on it, and I was like looking at the, because I've watched the video so many times, I've looked at where we were, and I definitely didn't reset in the same, like where I was.
You never do.
Like, you never know. Right. And like, if I would have, you know, of course. And then now I play back all the woulda, coulda, shoulda things. And it's just one of those ones that frustrating, you know?
You learn so much, right?
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
I've had some losses. I shouldn't have lost that.
Oh, for sure.
But you never make that mistake again.
Right. Yes. Yes. I will be very aware of my arms in that position, you know, from side control. Like, I just, nobody does that because everybody in the crowd is yelling buggy choke. And I'm like posturing up expecting and then when I did that, I let go. And then I was loose on that far side underhook and he shoved my arm in between his legs and that's how we got it. But, you know, I should have just played my game and not been worried about the buggy choke just because I don't know about you, but there's one guy in our gym who throws up buggy chokes and I'm usually pretty good at stopping him. It's not something that I'm
too
worried about.
And to your defense, I mean, you were training to fight or not to go do a match against Sean Woodson.
Replacement, right?
Yeah, this day before. It was supposed to be Sean Woodson, the UFC guy. And, you know, I had a whole game plan for him, but that, you know, and so I was working on a whole game plan for him the whole month leading up to that. And then it switched the day before. And I was like, fuck, you know, and then.
Dude, so that was the same thing. I was supposed to have Travis, I forgot his name, he's from St. Charles in May. He dropped like a week before. Just like, we had this feeling. Because Adam hit me up. He's like, have you heard from Travis? I'm like, and it's like, nor has he promoted this event. So I'm like, I'm not sure he's going to be here. And then the week out, he's like, yeah, Travis dropped. He's hurt. Like,
there it is. Yep. Same thing happened with so I've done that promotion twice. Same thing happened with my first match. It was supposed to be in one guy, ended up being another. Like that one, I wasn't as, because like the guy that I was supposed to be up against had like no video online or not. No, he had no nothing. So I was like, it doesn't matter. It's not like I'm just going to go out and play my game. It doesn't matter either way. But yeah, guess you can't ever count on who your opponent's going to be.
And see, like I'm so on the fence about this. It's like, do you scout or do you not scout? Right? Because like, I mean, even in baseball, right? It's like,
so yeah. I mean, ultimately, like with baseball, we would get the scouting reports and we would have one for like the overall year and then where they were like the last week. And you would basically, as a pitcher, you could sit there and kind of pick and choose how you wanted to pitch them. But ultimately, as a pitcher, you want to pitch to your strengths, not their weaknesses, because their weaknesses might be your weaknesses and you might make a mistake that's going to, you know, so, you know, it's nice to have the information and have it available to at least have an idea of how you want to attack. But ultimately for me, like I was always going to go pitch to my strengths versus pitch to somebody else's weaknesses and just, hey.
Just like my best can even beat your best.
Right,
so
exactly. Yep. So, you know, and then that's the thing is like, I don't know if, and I haven't been doing jiu-jitsu very long and haven't done any, obviously, any, done any competitions. But I don't, I mean, I think I would probably, yeah, it'd be nice to know.
Like, yeah, if this guy's good at this right, one like, thing, like I'm going to avoid that.
Position. Like that, you would have yeah. been able to know that this guy, this is his move.
Frustrating part is, like, is I did know that was his move, but he did it from a, he normally does it from tapas. He, like, I watched, he's got two videos online of him. He'll be in tapas eye control and he'll switch to a scarf hold. Like, you know, and I was like, that's weird. And, which is like, nobody does that. And, but he did it. He basically put me in a scarf hold from bottom position, which is very unconventional.
Yep.
And so I was like, I didn't expect it to come from there. I knew that if he got on top and he was in top side control to look out for that. And I actually worked scarf hold defense like the night before, cause I changed the day before and everybody's like, oh, he's really good at that scarf hold move. So like, I was like, oh, let me refresh myself on how to get out of a scarf hold. And, but I didn't end up even getting there. You know, because I was like, well, I don't want to end up on bottom side control. Like that was just stay out of that position and I'll be all right. And did never get there, but he still ended up getting me. But,
yeah, that's just grimy. You can't really do much about that.
Yeah, frustrating. You know, I promise you I won't get put in that submission again. That's for sure.
All right. And then you fight him again and now you know what he has. So
for sure. Yeah. I still got to go to a 10th Planet open mat one of these days and go get around and make myself feel better.
Which one was he training out of? Crystal City or?
Yeah, Crystal City. Okay. Or the fastest one. Or Tanglefoot, and they renamed it.
Okay. Oh, that's what they renamed it?
They renamed it to, 10th Planet Tanglefoot. So, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's, I bet they're all wearing leopard print, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But
yeah, so we connected at one of our buddies, Low T Connor.
Low-T Connor.
We give him shit all the time.
Yeah, he was on the podcast this past weekend, actually.
Yeah, he's been on a couple times, and we always give him shit because we're both on testosterone. We all have low T, so we give him shit because he actually had the highest testosterone levels out of all three of us. Yeah, so we were just joking about it.
Because he said somebody at Revive kept calling him that, and so I was like, oh, that's hilarious. So
that boy's strong, man.
It's insane.
Yes, I'm like, man. Yeah. He's like a gorilla. It's fucking frustrating.
Yeah, no, that's different. Like, Connor's strength is different. It's funny, because I was actually just with him 2 weekends ago at the race.
Yeah.
How was that?
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
Have you been to F1 before?
I think it was my third or fourth time. Remember? Yeah. So we it's an annual thing. And then Connor this year is like, hey, we have the RV thing. He's like, come over here. I'm like,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, party with those guys.
Let's do it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Susie fed us. You know.
Yeah.
Great.
Got us drunk.
I love it.
Yeah, can't complain about that, right?
Is it always in Austin, or how does that work?
So Austin is like the main race in the States, but then they just added Miami like 2 or 3 years ago, and they added Vegas last year. So now there's three.
How many F1 races are there per year?
This year it's like 23.
Okay,
it's a long season.
Okay,
it's so basically April through.
And how often do they race? Is it like?
Depends
on
where they are.
Or...
So, like, right now, they just did USGP, and they did Mexico City last week, and then they're going straight to Brazil.
Okay.
So, sometimes it's just back. Sometimes it's, like, 2 weeks in between.
And the logistics to get those cars to different places.
Dude, all of it.
It's just
paddocks. Everything. Like, all of it. Yeah, it's nuts.
That's crazy.
I'd love to go one of these times.
Yeah, I mean,
it
I've
looks
seen...
like it's a blast.
I've seen them, like, movies on stuff like that, but, like, I've never actually, like, watched it on TV or...
I've heard there's that show on Netflix that's really good about it.
Drive to Survive.
Yeah, yep. Everybody tells me I need to watch that.
Which is what made it blow up in the States, right? Because F1 is a European league.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I needed to check it out. I've heard my buddy Nick got really into it. He was like following it.
It's almost like soccer, man.
Yeah, pretty much. I would think also, like, if you like the nerd side of it, like, these cars are just, like, absolutely insane, right? Just, like, how much, like, balance they can change, like, the ratio of the braking, like, while they're in the car. The grip that these things take in corners.
I mean, I think that's one of the things. Like, I've never really been a big car guy. I wasn't ever really into cars like that. But I mean, and people like, oh, all they're doing is driving a car. Like, fuck, you're talking about G forces and stamina. Like,
I mean, my balls would be in my throat.
Yeah.
No ditty, but like, that would be.
No ditty.
No, but yeah, I mean, just the strength that it takes to be able to do that over that period of time. Like, what was I watching? Man, it might've been the Ferrari movie where they were talking about that. Or no, it was one of the ones based on a true story where the guy won the video games.
The Gran Turismo movie.
Yeah,
it was a good movie.
Yeah. So yeah, watch that and then like the car accident that he got in and all that stuff. Just like, fuck.
That dude's still racing, I think.
Is he?
Yeah.
I have to look that up. But yeah, it was a good movie.
That's a good movie.
I enjoyed that movie. So.
But yeah, we met with
Connor's birthday.
Yeah,
we hit it off. We were talking about being parents. So yep. Father, you've got your daughter. How old is she?
She's six.
Six. That's just right. Six, same. Like same, yeah, same as my son.
Kindergarten.
Kindergarten.
How's, she started kindergarten.
How's that going?
Loved it. We just got our first report card.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Killing it.
Hell yeah.
Perfect.
I colored
in the lines.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like damn, like. I have to let you go to Target and buy some shit.
Yeah, there you go. So how has your experience as a father shaped the way you approach leadership in your business, do you think?
Dude, I think being, it's super funny because like you look at being a dad, it's like, all right, how can I not screw this up, right? Like, how can I lead this person to be their best self? And it's like, I look at this, like, also try to do the same thing with my team. It's like, how do we lead our team to be the best that they can be? And it's like one of those things, like, I don't necessarily look at people's like, oh, you have to stay here, right? Like, I want you to go do, like, if it's being here, if that's what excites you, that's what really does it for you. Awesome. Like, I want you, like, I want to help you get to where you're trying to be. And I think, like, just being a dad, like, that's really helped me with leading people and even our clients, right? Mm-hmm. It's like having patience.
Yeah.
Well, you guys know.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it makes me look at everybody like they were a kid at one point, you know, and it makes me kind of like realize that it makes me just kind of like, all right, I get less frustrated with things than I think I used to, you know, because I'm like, oh, they you know, they don't know.
Dude, it's like being on the plane, like a kid screaming. I'm just like,
oh, dude,
I don't even hear it anymore.
Right. No. It's just, yeah. White noise. Yeah.
It's white noise.
Last night, I mean, our kid, one of our 4-month-old just basically screamed for 2 hours straight, you know, like we're just trying to get him to go to bed, you know, and then all of a sudden, like right before bed, he just starts crying and screaming. We're like, dude, what is wrong? Like, fed him, did all the things. We, you know, took him outside. Let's go put him in a bath. Let's go do, you know, all these things. And he's just still screaming. And you're just like, eventually you just don't even hear it anymore. You know, you're just like, it's just the worst.
Although 2 hours, that's a lot of screaming.
It was a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah. It was a lot. But, you know, eventually, and then all of a sudden it just stops. Goes down, falls asleep, and you're like, oh. You know, right? It's like, I can hear again.
Dude, like, I remember, like, when Berkeley was born, it was every hour, on the hour, the screaming. Like, really? I would go to the office and sleep.
Really?
Yeah. And, like, and she was, I mean, she's a baby. She's like, what can I offer? There's nothing I can offer this child. He does not want me.
Yeah, that's.
And I'm cool with that.
It's like really frustrating. It is frustrating at first, but then eventually you're just like, there's nothing you just got to accept that they want their mom.
Yep. Pretty much. And we are not it.
Yeah.
No, we're not. We are, you know, and you want to help, you want to like, you want to offer, what can I do? But there's really nothing other than like, get you something to drink, honey. You know,
like, dude, I was really big into the, like, we don't both have to suffer. Right.
Yes. Yeah. That's a.
Well, that's the thing. Like, so the biggest thing that shifted between, so like with my ex-wife, was when we switched from breast milk to bottle or to formula, because now she wasn't having to wake up and nurse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at that point we set up a routine. You know, I was always up late. I'm a night owl. I like being up late. And I don't know what it was. It just probably from years on the road with baseball and having that weird schedule, used to being up, getting into towns late. All that stuff. So used to being up late. So what we would do is like at 6 o'clock, that would be the last feeding that she did. And then, cause it was like every 3 hours. So she would go to, after she fed, she would go to sleep, and I would do the 9 o'clock, the midnight, and the 3 a.m. And then I would fall asleep.
Night shift.
Yeah. Then I would fall. But that's the thing. It was like, I mean, I've always been good at functioning on like 5 hours of sleep. So even at like, and at that time, like, yeah, waking up at 8 o'clock, I was fine. So I would do those three feedings, and then she would wake up and do six. So she was able to get 12 hours of sleep, which after having a kid and all that shit,
it's like hibernation.
Yeah.
That was like, she needed that. And so that was kind of the routine that we fell in. And then like, I would fall asleep, and then I would wake up at 8, and she would just, but she would do the feedings throughout the day while I was working. And I would come home, and that's how it was. But that wasn't, I mean, that was a couple months in. And so at that point, like, yeah, she needs that 12-hour window to sleep. And that's how we worked it. But
yeah, I noticed that, like, when we switched, because we did breast milk with Calvin for our oldest for like the first 5 or 6 months, and then Gina just didn't want to do it anymore because
it's a lot of work.
Well, it's a ton of work. The people that don't know, like, dude, breastfeeding and the pumping and the Gina had, like, you know, it's a weird, you know, it seems like a weird thing to complain about, but she's like a super producer. So, like, she would make like a crazy amount of breast milk every day. Like, and it was just like, she had to like keep up and constantly be pumping because otherwise it would hurt. And she was making anywhere from like 60 to 80 ounces a day.
Oh, cow.
Which is fucking nuts.
Wow.
And so, like, you know, having to like freeze all that, and then, like, you know, because we, you know, it's not just the, you know, you got to pump, you got to dump it into things, and then you got to, you want to like store them, you got to like freeze them on like a, you got to put them in the bags and store them, like get them flat. Yep. Yeah. And like, it's like a whole thing. And then you're not pumping, you're cleaning the pumps, and you're freezing the bags, you're organizing them, you're labeling them, putting the dates and all the, she was just doing it constantly. And I'm like, honey, like, why? This is because I could tell it was just stressing her the fuck out constantly. Yep. It's just too formal. And then
it's like, we can do that.
I'm like, I'm cool with that. That's what I was a formula baby. I turned out all right, you know? And but we noticed, like, right when we switched, I feel like he just started sleeping way, like, through the night, pretty much.
Really?
Like, yeah. And yeah, yeah, like, I mean, both of our kids, like, other than last night was kind of a fluke, but I mean, both of our kids sleep like anywhere from like 11 to 12 hours straight through, which is fucking awesome.
You know, like, so Berkeley will usually go to bed like at 8:30, and she's usually up like 6:30 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty. For a 6-year-old, it's not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. Yeah.
Mine, I mean, I don't know if they do this at my ex-wife's house, but I know they do it at mine because it's at my house. But I'll put them to bed at 8:30, and then usually around 3:30, they're climbing into bed with me. And like, all right. And then like 5:30 rolls around. They're like, all right. They start shifting and moving and kicking. And I'm like, guys, stop.
Dude, yeah.
Oh yeah. They're not still when they sleep.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like, I'll wake up like sometimes like Berkeley's like sideways.
Yeah.
I'm like,
well, yeah, my oldest one's great. Like, he just curls up in a little ball. But my youngest one, oh my gosh, that kid is like, he's like in a boxing or a kickboxing match in the middle of the night. He's like kicking and throwing punches
against you,
against me. Yeah. I'm just like getting hit in the face and the nuts, and I'm just like, dude. What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, we haven't. I mean, Calvin's still, he's, you know, 2.5. He's still in a crib. I mean, I think we're going to be probably switching to a big boy bed here soon, because as of right now, he can't get out. And, you know, and so, like, that's going
to
change.
You have to get up and get him.
Yeah,
I will say.
So that's going to be a big game changer when he can get out of the, you know. And
it was fun watching them become intuitive on how to get out of the crib. Like,
really?
That's like, I don't know. I feel like that's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Is like, leaving them in there long enough until they learn how to climb out of the crib.
Yeah, well, we still put him in one of those sleep sacks because of that reason, because I think it's like, it's going to make it a lot harder because he's essentially like stuck in a sleeping bag.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? But once, I mean, I bet if we didn't have him in that, he could probably figure out how to get out.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it was because it was funny because I use those Nanit cameras. So it's like the thing that hangs over, but you can watch it from your phone. And so you get notifications when there's movement or there's noise, and like, you can adjust it to like the sensitivity. So obviously, like, as they got older, we turned the noise sensitivity down, but kept the movement sensitivity. And so, yeah, we would get notifications like there's aggressive movement in the boys' room, and we would turn the camera on, and we'd be watching, just
making
Connor,
the great
Connor,
escape.
Connor would be standing around, he'd be looking around, and he'd be like trying to lift his leg up and climb up one way. And like, oh, it was great. Like, we would get. Just it was just pure entertainment watching these kids
figure out how to escape. Yeah,
they're fun, man.
Yeah.
Oliver would like pre-plan his escape because he's a little bit smaller than Connor was. So Kim trying to climb out was tough for him. Like he could get up, but then like he didn't have the wherewithal to like climb over, put his feet around because he wasn't tall enough to get his feet around and all that. So like before bed, we had these big fluffy chairs from Pottery Barn. And he would push it to the side of his bed before he went to bed. And like,
so he had something to jump
down.
Yeah,
so we weren't paying. Like,
he was planning.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah. So he would push this thing over, and the back of it came up high enough to where he could climb over and get his foot on that. And then he would like jump drop down, down yeah. drop down again, and he was down and then
he planned it,
yeah.
man.
Oh yeah, pre-planned his
that's awesome.
Pre-planned his escape. So if he's ever in prison, I know what's gonna happen there.
He's
gonna
figure it out. He's gotta
figure it out. He's gonna be like writing you letters from the yeah. inside. You have to like decode him. Yeah. Like, oh, this is what we're doing.
Gotcha. Yeah, got it. Got it. We figured it out.
Yeah. But yeah, they're funnier than shit though. So but what's it like having a little girl? Because we both have boys, so
okay, so like at first I was like, shit, I don't know. Like this is scary. Like I've never like I'm an only child. I don't even, you know, it's just me and my mom growing up. Like I don't know shit about it, right? Yeah, like right. especially raising one. It's the coolest thing ever though.
Yeah. That is a little girl.
Honestly, especially like girls mature so much faster. Bro, like people are like, man, like you don't get like how easy you have. Like it's easy.
Is it?
Dude, she's smart. She's respectful. Like I've taken her to meetings before, right? Like there's been times there's been times like Susan has to go to like a meeting and I'm like, can you take her? She's like, I can't take her. I'm like, I guess she's coming to me.
I can't even talk on the phone.
We did this.
Always scheming.
Always scheming, man. Like, do we walk into this meeting at SLU? I put her headphones on her iPad in front of her and she disappeared for an hour and a half. And after the meeting, like all these administrators are like, how do you
that would never happen.
Yeah.
I think just luck of the draw.
Yeah.
But it was funny because like it was one of those things people always ask me, like, oh, like, do you want more kids? I'm like, yeah, I would have been open to it, right? Mm. It's like if I have another girl, well, would you go for a third boy? Like if you did a third, like would you go for a boy? I'm like, look, I can't pick and choose, right?
Right.
I'm like, two girls, and at this, like statistically, probably speaking, like we're just pushing out girls at this point. It's a third girl, that's three weddings.
Oh yeah.
And that's how I looked at things, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. Three weddings.
I looked at things like, oh, it's a girl. All right. How many weddings? And that's like, oh, that's your tolerance level.
Sure. Right? Yeah. That makes sense. That's something I always forget about, the wedding thing.
Dude, if I had two girls, like, oh, shit, I'm just at two girls because I'm not paying more. I'm not paying for more than two weddings. Mm-hmm. And even that's going to probably bankrupt me. So I mean, one's probably going to bankrupt me, so it is what it is.
Yeah, anyway, I always forget about that. That's, like, the thing.
We get the rehearsal dinner.
You get the rehearsal dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's way more chill.
Yeah, right. Way better. Way better. Oh, man.
Yeah, but it's like, where are weddings going to be at? Like, you look at all, like, like how extravagant things get and how expensive things have gotten over the years. I'm like, fuck, weddings are gonna be like easy, like 50 to 100 grand, like in no time.
Yeah. Dude, we just did a wedding last weekend. We don't produce weddings. Yeah. And I'll say this, it was more than 100 grand.
Jeez. Oh, I believe it. Yeah,
that's
insane.
Looking
back on what I really don't exactly know the exact dollar amount ours was, but it was
fine. Mine was $132.
Oh, you went to the courthouse.
Yeah.
That's smart. Exactly.
Smart man. I'm like, wait, what? Yeah. What coupon did you find?
Yeah. Right.
It was on Groupon.
Who did you extort? That's what,
yeah.
That's what I'm going to be in the business of, just extorting people.
Yeah.
We found out, like, the goal was to get married before Connor was born. But we were renovating my apartment or my condo, and then finally got all that stuff done and moved in at the end, like middle to end of July. And we went in first week of August for her, started to doing her, you know, you're 30 days out from due date. So now you're going every week. And we went in that first week of the 30 days. And he's like, Doc was like, I don't know if you guys are gonna make it to the weekend. And we're like, oh shit. We got to go get married.
Yeah.
So we literally left. We went straight from the doctor's office to the courthouse in Clayton. Luckily, the only day you can do it is on Wednesdays.
It's Wednesdays. Yeah.
So, yeah. Wow. So we were there for, Wedding Wednesday. And we got there, like, we got in and got the license and our marriage certificate and all that and shot on over to the courthouse. And We just got in. We almost missed. We might have had to push it another week if we had not gotten in there in time. So yeah, we went straight from that to the doctor's office to the courthouse and got married. Called our friends on the way.
Every little girl's dream.
Hey, City of Clayton does it right though. My buddy just got married there. When was it? Late last year, early this year? I don't remember. Time's relevant, but The Clayton Courthouse is a nice little production.
Yeah, it's not bad. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do a pretty good job.
They do a pretty good job.
Hey, at least it's in Clayton.
You know? Right. Well, and we got there. We were obviously we were last. Everybody else was in front of us. But like, I mean, there were big groups there, like in all dressed up in their wedding dresses and tuxedos. And I mean, Melissa and I are showing up. She's in her maternity clothes and I'm in like a polo shirt and dress pants. Yeah.
It works.
Right. It does. And yeah, like I said, it was $132. It was nice.
Yeah. That part's nice for sure.
Well, for sure. So, but yeah, no, it was an experience. But we were going to do a destination wedding the following year and we started planning that and that was going to cost us for 2 weeks down at Playa Mujeres and for like 30 guests to attend a wedding for like the wedding and the ceremony and all the food and everything. Plus our 2 weeks was going to be like 12. With round trip tickets and everything. So yeah, it was, we were looking to it. And then all of a sudden we were getting ready to put our deposit down and she's like, Pat, I'm pregnant again. Like, well, there goes that. Yeah. We'll try again next year.
Yeah.
But you know how that pregnancy thing works, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we never had sex again.
Yeah.
We were batting 1,000 at that point.
My man couldn't miss, yeah. Dude.
Strong swimmers.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Bosnian women are very fertile.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Oh, man. So.
I want to talk a little bit more about Big Blue Spark. So how exactly did you? I mean, obviously you had your previous previous job where you kind of were doing the but so then that kind of led you into this. So what exactly do you guys do? You put on these events, right? So is that you like coordinating with the venue and then the people throwing the event and you kind of like organizing it, or exactly kind of tell me how does it all play out?
Dude, so we do as much or as little as you need, right? So we have clients where there's like, hey, we have this idea, we know we want to do this. You guys take it from here. No, so we'll, do the theme development, what people are actually going to do at this thing, the budget, the timeline, technical direction and production, so like sound, lights, video, booking entertainment, I mean, graphic design, art direction, like the entire thing.
Cool.
And there's some people that just say, hey, like, we just need you to book a band, or we need you to design, a creative suite. It just depends. Mm-hmm. So. We're overall creative agency, and it started off as a event production company, but then COVID happened. Obviously, you have to.
Yeah, that probably really
events weren't fucking
up.
Happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So what did you? Yeah, tell me how that pivot happened.
So I would say we were probably one of the. I think we were like the second agency in town to really like go the virtual route. Like, so it was like March of 2020 or whatever. We watched like 90% of our revenue just fucking run out the door. It's like sucks.
Shit.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, like most of our clients, well, at this point, I would say like 80% of our clients are nonprofit. So like, it was an easy thing. It's like, well, they still need to raise money. So how can we do a thing where they can still host an event, but in a virtual space? Dude, I think that year we only end up losing like 30 or 40 grand. So we were able to claw back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
A lot more work. And everyone thought, oh, it's the internet. So it's free or it's cheaper. And I'm like, you still need to develop this content,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like, unless you just want to sit on the Zoom and talk to people for an hour. So, like, we were building sets out, sending catering and all sorts of shit to people's houses. So,
Yeah, that's cool.
But I never want to do COVID again. Hopefully this country never does that shit.
Yeah, right? Obviously. Like, I think we're all on the same page there.
Well, and I think we're at a point now where everybody went through it and they're like, all right, yeah, fuck this.
Falling for that shit again.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's dangerous business just walking out your front door.
Like, right.
I'll take my chances.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and especially people like, I don't know about you, you probably didn't stop training jiu-jitsu that whole time. I mean, like I was training every day, pretty much.
Dude, so super funny. So I was still at Maelstrom at that point. Okay. And Jason's like, oh, I guess we'll do like this whole shut down thing. And 2 weeks later, he's like, you guys want to come back and train? We're like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he just took the sign off the door.
Coming through the back door or whatever it was, we all figured out a way to still train.
Just figure out a way. And do like, here's one day, one of the guys I trained with, he comes in, and he's just like, hey, bro, you good? He's like, oh, it's just allergies. I'm like, dog, it's June.
Yeah. It's not allergies.
Bro, it's not allergies. That's COVID. The entire room had it.
Yeah.
Really?
But I haven't had it again since.
Chances are most of those guys, you know, yeah, you probably, but then you survived it though, you know. I mean, it's so weird how it affected everybody so differently. Like, I had it and I felt bad for like a day. You know, I had a day where I was bad, but then my, you know, guys like my dad had, he had fever for like 2 weeks straight, you know, and
long fever.
Yeah, it's a long, you know, and I talked to, we had a client of ours closed last week. I mean, he was hospitalized, put on a ventilator.
So he said he was in a coma.
Yeah, in a coma for like 40 days or something. Crazy.
Yeah. I had it and I didn't even know I had it. Yeah. I found out, so it was at Thanksgiving. My buddy called me and he's like, hey man, and he got fucked up from it. And he's like, hey, just want to give you a heads up because I was just with him. He's like, I've got COVID. I was like, this was the day after Thanksgiving. And I'm like, okay, well, I thought I was a little bit hungover from last night, but maybe COVID.
That's it. Yeah.
But like, I woke up Saturday and I was feeling fine. I went and got tested and had it. Felt bad because I just had all family over at the house. So we're texting everybody like, hey, I had COVID, so just be careful.
Heads up.
Nobody got it.
That's good.
Yeah, no one else got it. And my only symptom was that next day. But again, like, I don't know if it was because I was hungover or what. And I had a little bit of stomach issues, but that was about it. And I was fine come Monday. Like, nothing.
Yeah.
So
it's probably the hangover.
Like I said, that's what I thought. Like, yeah. Maybe that rakia that the Bosnians drank, man, that killed that virus.
Yeah. Should have killed everything.
That kills everything else.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I mean, but that was the thing, is like being down in Jefferson County where my office is, they just did the 2 weeks and we were right back in our office.
Yep, right. Yeah. Everything just normal. Yeah.
And then I think there was like a regulation, like you could only have 10 people in the office, which our office is, we run the teams that are run out of my office are run thin. And we've got, we have five on our team. And then the other team that's in there is four. So, and I'm not ever in there.
Yep.
Like, I think I've been in there six times this year. And if I'm in my office, I'm not doing my job.
That's true.
So they're in there. And so really, like, at any given time there, at most, there's probably eight people. And so we never had any issues, never got any complaints or anything like that. So, but it did. I mean, the way it changed our industry, I think it changed it for the better.
I agree.
From my perspective. Cause like prior to COVID, like homes would hit the market and it was like immediate, like, hey, they would hit the market like at any given day of the week. And then I'd have clients calling like, hey, I need to get like this house just hit the market. I need to write an offer today. They're, you know, so cause they weren't doing this whole coming soon on Friday, coming live Friday, accepting offers Sunday or Monday and all that. So now like that's been great because now it allows home buyers to take their time to get through the process.
Oh, house came on the market, you know, then he was just basically like the first one to get there and submit an offer. They'll give him like a 4-hour response time. So it's like, you got to pretty much respond to this thing within the next couple hours or the offer's no good anymore.
We're moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but now it's definitely changed the industry just because it gives people way more time. It's like, you don't have to go see it Friday the second you get off work. Let's go see it on Saturday. We've got plenty of time. We spend way more time there. We can even go back for a second look if you really need, you know, got the time. And so that really changed everything. And I mean, for the better, like you said.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it seems like things are getting somewhat back normal minus interest rates. But I mean, it still seems like we have a pretty, like we have a shortage of inventory.
Oh, for sure. Here,
right? We're going to be short for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think that's changing anytime soon. Because they just can't build houses fast enough to catch it up.
And there's not enough land, plus the workers, plus supplies and everything that they need to build a house. Costs going through the roof. Like, yeah, I mean, we've seen some of those costs come down to build a house, but I mean, you think those builders are dropping their prices?
Hell no.
Yeah. So, right. I mean, that's the thing is you know, we're gonna have this inventory problem for a long time. I mean, you got the largest generation ever, baby boomers, who now, like, probably 90% of them own their home free and clear.
Yep.
So why the hell would they want to leave, especially after COVID? What did we learn? We really want to go to a retirement community or like senior living facility? No. Like,
and something gets passed around and it just wipes out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They're staying in their houses.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so, you know, and then now what we're seeing is those people are passing it down to kids or grandkids because there's no homes. Yep. So it's just going to continue that trend until, shit, I don't know.
Yeah. We'll see. But I don't see a change in anytime soon. But I agree with what you're saying. I think things are slowing down a little bit. Like, I'm not seeing, you know, every house get a million offers like it used to. I mean, you know, but it is, you get the right house that's super, it's always the house that's super updated and just like really cute pictures and has every, the house is basically move-in ready.
Priced right.
Yeah, priced right is everything. And those ones will get multiple offers. But if you just have like an, you know, average normal looking house, I mean, there's a chance that, it, you know, you get multiple, but the chances are slim, or, you know, are slimmer than they were. Sure.
Dude, like I remember like 2021 and 2022 getting a phone call like once a month. Hey, you want to sell your house? I'm like, you can go where?
Right.
Yeah. Where am I going
to
go?
Right. Where do you want me to go?
Well, I have a little key for that. If someone ever calls you, just tell them you're a real estate agent. They'll hang up on you.
Yeah.
Which, instead of you hanging up on them, you know, they'll hang up on you.
I'm gonna do that.
I'm like, hey man, I'm a real estate agent, real estate investor. You're really calling the wrong person. You know,
I just like to tell them like, what would it take for you to sell your house? Give me $1 million.
Yeah,
that's what it's gonna take.
People say that too. Yeah,
give me $1 million. I'm like, we see your house.
Here's the problem with that is then they'll go back because the chances are that person's like a VA calling you, so it's someone that they hired to call, and they're probably in, you know, the Philippines or something.
Sure.
And they'll be like, because I've hired VAs to do that before, and then they'll call me and be like, hey Zach, we got a lead on someone that wants to sell their house. And then they'll send me the notes from the call, and they're like, oh, this person said they'll sell it for $1 million, and I look it up on, you know, I pull up Zillow or something, and it's like, okay, this estimate is $240,000. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, so I know that guy because like they couldn't tell that person was fucking with them.
Yeah.
You know, like they didn't, you know, they didn't get the sarcasm.
Yeah,
yeah, they didn't catch the sarcasm, yeah, and they're, you know, they're like, I got a great lead on $1 million house. I'm like, and I pull it up. I'm like, come on, you know,
he's, like, no, he's fucking with you, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. Then I eventually, like, the girl I was having do it, I, you know, I showed her, I was like, all right, well, next time pull the house up on Zillow and like, or, you know, cause that's, I don't always say go by the Zillow, but like, if you just want to get a rough idea of what something's going to go for, like, yeah, that's a good way to get you in the ballpark. It's not going to be 100% accurate, but it'll get you, you know, within 50 or 100K of probably where it needs to be. And
which is close enough.
Yeah. Close mm-hmm. enough yeah. to know that they're going to know that they're fucking with you. You know, I had to explain to this girl that like, they're messing with you here. You know, like you got to kind of catch that.
300K's estimate. Million.
Yeah, that doesn't line up. This guy's messing with me. So yeah, just tell them you're a real estate agent. They'll hang up on you.
I'm going to do that now.
Yeah, there you go.
So getting back to what it is that you do, what made you decide to get into, I know you did the whole booking of the bands, but what made you get into the overall event planning of things like that?
You know, dude, like, I don't know. I've just always like really been into entertainment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wanted to be a rock star, man. Like I was growing up, like I just wanted to like be on stage and sing and play guitar and like,
fuck yeah.
Yeah. You know, do guitar twirls and toss them across stage every night. I was like, well, this isn't going to happen. So I was like, but I can like do something that entertains people. And I mean, that's what really got me into it. It was funny. Like I was in college. I was like, well, maybe I'll like, it's like I started as a finance major. I was like, oh, like I'll do this whole thing. Maybe go trade stocks or do something boring.
That's what mine was.
Yeah, just go do something boring.
I'll make money doing it.
Yeah, it's like, at least I'll make money doing it. It's like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I was like, well, maybe I'll go to law school. I'm like, that shit sounds terrible too. Like, yeah, every lawyer I talk to.
5 years of school?
Fuck. Yeah, like every lawyer I talk to, they're just like, don't do this shit.
Yeah.
Like, this is miserable.
Yeah.
I love events. And so me and my buddy Dan, we just start promoting concerts. College. I was like, let's just see what happened. And it worked out. But I kind of kept doing it.
So is Dan your partner?
No. He's out in New York now. Okay. He works for an agency out there. He's great at what he does. So he's on the representative side. So he's repping acts. But I like the event side because no day is the same, right? Like we're always doing something new. Every project's different. You know, you have some challenging clients and you have some clients who are just like, here's the budget, here's our idea, go have fun.
Run with it.
So what's been to date your favorite event that you've thrown or put on?
Damn, that's tough. There's a couple good ones. Okay. We have a client in town that's actually really cool. They're called Urban Sprouts Child Development Center. The woman that created this, Alicia Lanier, she wanted to create a place that kids from underserved neighborhoods can like just come and have like this awesome, just like great education, kind of a bougie experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like in the hood, there's not a ton of great daycare options, right? Like they're kind of run down. And 65% of the families that go to Urban Sprouts receive some type of financial assistance, right? In this place, like every time I go there, I've like, I always joke, like, this is like the Princeton of daycare. Like this place is insanely awesome. Like I have friends that live out in Manchester, Missouri that drive to U City where this place is and drop their kids off every day. Goes to school. Gardens, playgrounds, they're expanding now to where parents can come if they're from an underserved community where they're going to be able to have like banking service and like a nurse practitioner on site. Like it's some pretty cool shit.
That's pretty
cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But they do like this really big event every year. It's called Gala en Blanc, and it's usually between like 500 and 600 people. And invites only go to about like 60, 70 people a year. So it's super exclusive. Like, you just can't hop online. You have to get invited to it. And like that person is responsible for filling their table. Thing is, like, this woman has like really cool vision and is not afraid to push the envelope of like what these stuffy galas were in town. So it's like, so every single one we've done with her has just been over the top.
Really? How many of them have you done?
This year, it's our fourth one. Keener Plaza, Big Top, City Park, which is really cool. We just did Cortex Tom Commons this year. So it was our fourth one with her. We also do the Blues and Brews season kickoff for St. Louis Blues. That's a fun one.
Awesome.
If you like blues hockey.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, doesn't. Yeah.
Blues hockey, country music, and it's a good time.
That's pretty cool.
It's a good time.
Where's that go on at?
That's at the Anheuser-Busch Beer Garden.
Okay.
Yeah. And they usually have like a couple thousand people show up to that one.
Now, do the blues players actually come and all that?
Blues players are actually there every year.
Sweet.
So they do, they usually pick like 7 to 9 players to get on stage and they do a moderated session for like 45 minutes. They'll walk around, sign shit. And, you know.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty
that's
cool.
Awesome. So how many people are in Bay Blues Park?
There's four of us. Okay. So it's me and my business partner, and we have two other producers. Yep.
Gotcha.
So small but
keep
mighty.
It small. Yeah, dude.
Well, dude, I think.
Dude, that's where it's at, man. I think when you start scaling things too big, I've never been there, I guess, with anything, but I can just see it just getting it. You're just creating so much more work, too. And, you know, it's, I don't know, more work, but I guess you can grow it bigger, too. But I don't know. I just think there's something super valuable about keeping something small and controlled, and like, you know, you're really involved. Doesn't lose your touch.
Well, I think that's super important in agency life, right? Especially like if you're a service, and it's hard to scale a service, easy to scale a product, right? Like this is easy. Like I'm gonna say we're gonna put $100,000 behind marketing in this, and we're gonna sell. You know, we know what we get from that dollar.
Right.
With the service, it's like, well, it's us.
Right.
We're the product. And I've seen agencies go from, you know, one person to 10, 15 people. And the next thing you know, they're back down to like four people. Like you lose one key account, it's just game over. You know, so my thing was always like, well, if we can kind of keep our core to where things are like our core element of the business, like this is being done right in house. I don't have to worry about hiring freelancers and stuff like that. Like I can just look across the rooms like, hey, I need this. And then if it's outside of that core, we can have like these preferred answers that we go to, but also like what's great about keeping because we're keeping our overhead down, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like we're competing with other agencies that are bigger than us and we're winning because people are just like, dude, there's just so much more value in your budget. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm still making the margin that I need to make. I'm not paying to have a staff of 10 people, mm-hmm. you know?
So you're keeping costs low.
Yeah, I'm paying 4 salaries. I'm not paying, you know, 20.
Yeah.
And it's been crazy to see even like the size of clients that are now coming to us, right? Like work with Barnes Jewish Hospital, Greater St. Louis Inc., Anheuser-Busch. And it's like, yeah, like you guys
huge
might be small. Yeah. Like you guys might be small, but you guys get the work done.
Right.
At a price that
makes sense.
We like, and especially like post COVID, like, man, I don't care who you are. These days of like just unlimited budgets are gone. They're gone. You know, even my buddies at Anheuser-Busch, like sometimes it's like, hey man, like this is my ceiling. like legit my ceiling. Like, just don't have any.
Yeah, especially after the Bud Light thing.
Right.
Yeah. Those people got fired. So.
Yeah, well, that was a rough move. I know they lost like billions of dollars.
It was the dumbest thing they've done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just they
regret
stupid.
That one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just like
all your crowd.
Yeah. Well, I think customer. Just like not to like, and like not to make it political, but like you just like your marketing plan just wasn't even to the right demographic. Like, do that shit with neutral or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't do it with Bud Light.
Yeah, that's our, that's, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, first of all, that audience isn't drinking Bud Light in the first place.
Right.
Right.
Like,
yeah. But yeah, think of your average Bud Light drinker. No, they're not.
Dude, like, if we go to a gay bar in the Grove,
right?
I wonder how much Bud Light they're selling, even before the whole.
Sure. I would love to know. I mean, well, it is the most popular. It was, you know, was the most popular beer. I'm sure it's not now. Probably not anymore. I don't know. But I know it was like the biggest, the most popular beer and like that was ever served. And then I know that for that, those numbers have fallen significantly now. So I'm sure they did sell Bud Light there, but not to the, it, you didn't win a bunch of people over and 100%. More people are drinking it now. It definitely seemed to go the other way because they kind of turned on the people that loved them or is what it seemed. And nothing's
they
worse.
They took it personally.
Nothing. No, yeah, nothing's worse than when Kid Rock shoots your beer with a machine gun.
Dude, it's fun. So I've actually, and he's back to drinking Bud Light. I've actually done a Kid Rock show before.
I
booked him for RJ Reynolds back in the day.
Sick.
He's a nice guy.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's actually a really nice guy.
I believe it. I mean, I've watched him on. I've listened to him on Rogan before, and apparently he's got like he has a his house in Tennessee. It's an exact replica of the White House, but it's only got two bedrooms, and then they put a an elevator like right when you walk in the front door. He's because they were like, you know, Kid Rock, where do you want us to put the elevator? He's like, I want it to be right when you fucking walk in, because I want someone to walk in and be like, man, this Kid Rock's got a fucking elevator in his house. And he's got a bathroom that's like he's with like 100% gold toilet.
I mean, fuck you money at this point.
Yeah, right? Fuck yeah. You got to do that. You're fucking Kid Rock. Right. You know?
He's just a bound country boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's, he is exactly that dude. So like the show was in Vegas. He was flying in. It's like an hour before meet and greet was going to start. And I'm looking at his manager, Lee. I'm like, hey man, Kid's not here yet. He's like, well, he's leaving this winery out in California. Like he'll be here.
California?
Yeah, I'm like, all right, bro. Like, meet and greet starts, and he's like, yeah, an hour, yeah. He'll be here. Like, this dude just got paid $500,000 for this fucking show. Like,
he better be.
This guy needs to be here.
Jeez.
On time, because I don't want to listen to these execs, like, on mass. Like, yo, where's this guy?
Yeah, well, where's your boy?
Yeah.
And he made it.
Oh, he's there, on time. Shows up in a white t-shirt, Levi's. I'm like, I go greet him. The show was, how would we do the show, at the Venetian? And he gets out. He's like, are you Kevin? I'm like, yeah, hey, Bob. Nice meeting you. He's like, yeah, cool. Let's go to my room. Here's my dog. He's like, all right. He's like, just take me. So take him upstairs. I'm carrying this guy's little doodle. He's in a cowboy hat, jeans, and a t-shirt. goes down to the meet and greet. Have to pull him away from the meet and greet because he wanted to shake every hand. Sign up.
Like,
Bob, we got to get you on stage now.
Yeah.
He rocked it, man.
That's awesome.
He put on a hell of a show.
I love Kid Rock.
Oh, man. Just think about that. Back in the early 2000s, the music that came out. I mean, there was some good
music. Oh, fuck
good
yeah. Some
music.
Good stuff. There was some good stuff.
Yeah. I think that today's stuff. I mean, I just, now I feel like, now I know how my parents felt, like, listening to our stuff. They're probably like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I feel like that happens with every generation, you know? Like, I still go back and I listen to a lot of the same shit that I listened to in high school, you know, and like even like that's like still some of my favorite. I mean, there's new music that comes out that I do like, but I feel like I always revert back to the shit that I loved when I was like driving around, like right after I just got my license, and you know, I'm 16, 17, driving around in my first car. Like it's like some of the shit that I still fucking do.
Emo wasn't a phase, just saying.
No, 100%. I still listen to that stuff. Actually, speaking of that, I mean, I've been jamming out to Beartooth's new album. You ever listen to that?
I like Beartooth.
Dude, I did. I just kind of discovered them, but their new album's sick. I've been listening to a lot of it.
I just went to the Under Oath show 2 weeks ago in St. Louis.
Yeah,
it was 20 years of They're Only Chasing Safety.
Damn,
really?
That's sick.
I was like,
it came out 20 years ago. Dude, that's crazy.
Which is 20 years ago is 2004.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy.
Yeah, because when you say 20 years ago, I think like mid-90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, uh-huh. It still feels like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I don't, it, like, time fucks me up.
Dude, so like, I'm like, we're standing around the pageant, I'm looking around, so like, it's all people my age.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it's all the old folks.
Yeah, like a little bit of gray coming in. We're going to be complaining about our knees and hips later.
Just rocking out.
A lot of the Masters division in here.
Dude, I'm going to be Masters 2 in February.
Damn, dude.
Stoked.
Yeah.
Sure. When's your next match?
I don't know. Yeah. Sure. I think I'm going to do the Austin Open February. Ooh. And usually, like, I did NOLA like 3 years in a row, and I didn't do it this like the last 2 years. So I think I might go down to that too.
Still haven't done an IBJJF. I need to. I don't know why.
It's a well-run tournament. Like, if you don't want to just deal with the bullshit, like.
Yeah, I've done, like, probably 20 Fujis at this point. Or, I mean, not 20, but I've probably done 10-plus Fujis at this point.
I think the older I get, especially now, like, we have kids, I'm like, I can't be here all day. Like, yes. I want to start. I want to get this shit done, like, an hour and a half.
Bro, the last time
They're pretty efficient, IBJJ.
It's the
yes,
best.
Yes, yeah. Like, the the time that they tell you you're going to compete.
It's
like,
the time you compete.
Yeah, it's, whereas the Fuji one, like the one that was most recently, like the times changed like so many times. Like the last Fuji I did, it was so frustrating, and I'll never do both gi and no gi in the same day again at a Fuji, because I went at like 9 a.m.
That was brave of you.
Bro, it was so stupid. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm here, might as well do it, you know? But I competed in the gi at 9 a.m., felt fucking awesome. I was really proud. I won my first match. Lost my second one on an advantage. You know, it was like a really close match. I think it was an advantage. But it was a really close match. Really happy with both my performances in both matches. And then my next match wasn't until like 5:30 or something. You know, so I basically fucking sat around for like 9 hours.
Yep.
And I'm just like, you know, and then I went out and I got won one, lost one. But the one that I lost, I was like, shouldn't have lost that guy. You know, I just didn't want to be there.
Well, you
anymore.
Get to the point, you're like mentally out of it.
Yeah, right? I'm like, well, I sat there and watched a fucking 100 matches. My voice is gone from yelling. And I'm like, it's just, I was like, I'm never doing both of them again.
I think, like, and especially like the older I get and like the deeper you get in this game, like you're out there because the level's just getting high. It's like, you have to be selfish.
100%.
You know, so it's like sometimes like, if I don't watch your match or whatever, it's not personal. Like,
right.
I'm just trying to keep myself.
Yeah. Looking back on it, I should have left, you know, knowing that I wasn't going to compete. But there's the thing with Fuji, that could fucking change on an instant. All of a sudden, that 5:30 could get moved up to 2:30, you know? Because, like, looking back on it, I probably should have just left, went home, took a nap, hung out with my kids, and then maybe come back, you know? And then, I probably would have just felt, I would have gone into it feeling different, for sure.
For sure.
But instead of sitting there, you know, walking around, being on my feet all day, yelling at the other, you know, yelling at all my friends competing and, you know, cheering for them and stuff. And then by the time you get back there, I'm just like, oh, I got to warm up again. And I'm like, oh, I don't feel like it. I'm like kind of already, it's weird. It's always weird to me is how like you'll get like sore after like a competition, like after a match where it's like, dude, I train 4-5 days a week, you know, and I'm like, I'm not sore when I'm rolling live in the gym, you know, but all of a sudden you get a competition match and you're like,
it's a different round.
Yeah. It's a different round, a different, you know. Round, but you know, that like soreness, stiffness was like starting to kick in, and you're just like,
well, this one is like after that match in June. I was like, man, I got off that match. I'm like, oh, man, I felt great. Next day, everything hurt. And the thing is, like, man, it's like I do rounds with Connor.
Yeah,
like, we got Connor, Chance, Matt. Like,
you got a tough gym.
There's like,
especially being a guy your size, like me. You know, we're about the same size. Because like anytime I go to Revive, I'm like, fuck, these guys are big.
It's going to be a long hour.
God, these are some big old boys out here.
Well, and like everybody that I've heard talk about Connor, he's not gentle.
No.
He's
not, too.
No. Yeah, he got to wait him out. That's the strategy.
Yeah. I tell Connor sometimes, like, dude, I love Connor. But it's like, I'm just like, yo, dog, I got to be in the Ford, bro.
Which is crazy to think, where his energy level is. At all times, like I've never seen him dip below like a 10 on the energy level. And
I saw him tired in Austin. It's the first time ever.
Really? Yeah. That's the thing is like, if he were to get on testosterone, holy fuck. Like,
yeah, it'd be a problem.
What the hell?
Game over.
Oh, gosh.
For everyone.
Everyone.
So we always say in Revive, man, if you're under 200 pounds, you're a victim.
Yeah.
So funny.
If you're under 200, you're a victim. Victim weight.
Yep, that's me.
Yeah, what do you weigh, like 170-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
Yeah, I figured you were probably about the same size. I don't know. Have we ever rolled together?
I don't think so, man.
I don't think so. I was trying to think about that on the way here. I was like, yeah, I have. I can't. I've only been to, I mean, I've been going to Revive on Fridays a lot more lately, so I'll see you.
Yeah, we just got out of busy season, so I'll definitely be out there. I used to go to Watson's, too, a little more often, like during the week.
Yeah.
It's like Monday or Tuesday.
Monday,
or
Wednesday,
like
open mats. Yeah, those are really good. I usually make the Monday ones because Wednesdays we do this, but I usually always do the 10 o'clock class and then hang out for like 30 minutes to an hour of the open mat right afterwards.
Dude, it's just crazy just like how many of us tag teamers there are. Mm. So it's there's so many people like that I haven't even met yet.
It's crazy. Like, I mean, with Watson's as big as it is, dude, I constantly run into people. How long have you been training there?
Dude, Kyle, man.
And he knows every single person.
Knows everybody.
You want to talk about an amazing business owner?
Yeah.
Dude, he's...
Holy shit.
It's incredible. What he's built there, it's just so... It's so cool. He's so good at what he does. And just how organized he is with everything. The curriculum and everything. Like, he's got the whole year plan.
Yeah. Like, he's...
Does Junior run his similar?
I don't think Junior does the curriculum, but Junior and Jess, man, like, they're also, like, fantastic business owners.
Yeah, I feel like that's what you see with a lot of jiu-jitsu schools is like, you know, just because someone's good at teaching jiu-jitsu doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a good
100%
business owner.
They're both great at, like, getting people in the door. And like, that's also super important. Also just like the culture. And I think a lot of it's pretty similar to Watson's. There's just not a lot of drama.
Yeah.
Right? Which is super funny because you don't necessarily think, typically, it's really a bunch of guys, right? Like, between both gyms is probably 80% men, 20% women.
At least, yeah.
And just like how dramatic some men can be.
You get all those guys in there that are beating up on each other and, you know, talking shit.
Yep.
And, you know, shit can just, it can get, but Kyle's real good at snuffing that shit.
Yeah, like, it's like,
that shit out, cuts
not
the cancer
here.
Out.
Yeah, but you also got to remember, I mean, there's a respect. I mean, you got, everybody's in there busting their ass, getting their asses kicked and, so there's a mutual respect that you have because you're building that camaraderie. So, I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's some gyms out there that don't really have that, or guys that go too hard or take things a little too serious, too, you know, and but like, I mean, I remember, you know, Trevor got on that one guy that visited when I was rolling with him and he started manipulating my wrist and that's when my elbow popped and they were immediately like, nope, you're done.
Yeah.
So.
See, if that would have happened at Revive, he would have gotten flogged.
Yeah. Well, they would have just given you to the mat enforcer.
Yeah.
You
know,
would have given you Chance or one of the other big purple belts or somebody.
That shit happened a couple weeks ago, man. Someone really? Came in being a little rough. And
yeah.
They put some dogs on him, dude.
They're going to do your next two rounds with these guys.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you won't be back at Revive.
Yeah.
Well, shit, that was like the first time I went in and out of the, from basics to fundamentals or they were like, nope, you're gonna roll with these guys.
Yeah,
welcome to fundamentals.
Yeah, welcome to fundamentals. Yeah. You're gonna go roll with the purple belts.
Yeah, within 10 seconds of my first match with, I forget who it was, he had me in an arm bar.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think you have to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Oh,
like,
for
every
sure.
Gym has to.
Yeah.
You got to
It's
gotta
like
experience.
A rite of passage.
It's a rite of passage. Yeah. Just like we're setting the tone. It's like, hey, this is our house.
You got to realize this shit works.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
you
works.
Know, like that's what I, you know, because everybody, I think when they probably first tried jiu-jitsu for the first time is like, you're going in and it's like, is this real? You know, like having wrestled, you know, before doing jiu-jitsu, I was like, okay, well, this is a whole different thing. You know, I knew about it, but I was like, well, I'm a wrestler and I work out, I lift weights and, you know, I wrestled in high school, like I'm tough, you know, and then I go there and I've told the story on the podcast a million times, but, you know, Amanda Clifton just, you know, subbed me like 3 or 4 times in a 3-minute round. And I was like,
she's gnarly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, she's an animal. Like her and I, you know, we do CrossFit and shit together now. And but I remember she just beat the fuck out of me my very first day. And I was like, whoa. Like,
yeah, she's
because I was impressive. Like, I'll go with this girl. Like, you know, I'm not gonna like girls not gonna beat me up. Yeah, I can't tell you how many.
Dude, I've never seen her do jiu-jitsu, but watching her in the gym, holy fuck!
Yeah, she's a freak.
Yeah, she's not.
You know, I mean, she's very good at jiu-jitsu, but she's also just like athletically, you know, like just and the weight that she can throw around and like the times that she can get on some of these workouts. It's like
she's incredibly strong.
Yeah, the mental toughness that she has to just
push her body to the absolute fucking limits to where she just crashes is insane.
Did you guys see that? You see that burpee mile that they did?
I didn't watch it.
I didn't. I mean, I saw. Yeah, I've only seen the clips.
Yeah.
Where they did a burpee mile, where they you know do a burpee and then a broad jump burpee for a full mile. I'm like,
you know, I didn't see any brothers out there.
Yeah. Nope.
Not one.
Nope.
And I wouldn't have been the one either.
No, I was talking about that with Gina last night. She was like, why would they ever do that? Like, and that's not even like something to brag about. I was like, well, because it's CrossFit and we enjoy fucking punishing ourselves.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, I mean, anything else you want to promote before we let you go?
Yeah. I mean, not really, guys. I mean, just thanks for having me. It's been fun sitting down. Sure. Yeah. Big Blue Spark.
Huh? Big Blue Spark for all your local events here in St. Louis.
Absolutely. And one last thing before we let you go, we always like to surprise guests with one last question. It's called the Tombstone Game.
Let's do it.
Here lies Kevin. What's it say on your tombstone?
Oh, that one fucking guy. That's what it says.
Oh, that's
that
one.
Oh, that fucking guy. That's perfect. Yeah. I love it.
That's awesome. That.
Perfect. Well, awesome. We appreciate you coming on, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning into the episode. Remember, if you haven't subscribed yet, please click that subscribe button for us. We'd really appreciate that. Click that like button, comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.